Okay, good morning, honorable members. We now are starting our meeting. Welcome you all to this joint meeting of the Portfolio Committee on Health and the Select Committee on Social on Health and Social Services from the NCOP. We will be starting now, and I will actually allow Honorable Gillian to actually go through the first item after her opening remarks, which will be a confirmation of attendance by members. I would imagine it will be supported by them, the secretary has been doing that, and then we will then give it to the department that I know is led by the deputy minister to confirm their attendance. We'll then take apologies. I will come back just before the start of the department to do the briefing. Maybe let me now welcome you all and thank you and ask Honorable Gillian to welcome us and take us through item number 2 and 3.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, members. Allow me to welcome all our members from the Portfolio Committee on Health and also the members from the Select Committee on Health and Social Services to this very important meeting where we deal with the adjustment budget this morning amidst COVID-19. We are still continuing with our work, and it is a privilege and an honor this morning, Chairperson, to welcome all of us. Before we continue, Chair, let me ask these two committees to allow a moment of silence for the MEC that succumbed from COVID-19 in the Northwest. Can we have a minute of silence, please, Chairperson? Thank you, members. Let's continue with the second item, which is the confirmation of attendance by all our members. Can we get the secretaries of the two committees to assist us on this, please?
Morning, Chairperson. Morning, members. Marcel here. Confirming membership for the SC on Social Services. We have yourself, Chairperson Gillian. We have Ms. Maleka, Ms. Ndongeni, Ms. Njamaleng, Ms. Christians, Ms. Letuli, and Ms. Lahihi. Chairperson, I have not received any apologies. Thank you.
Thank you. The Secretary of the Portfolio Committee, can you assist us, please?
Thank you, Chair. Good morning. We have the Chairperson of the Committee, Dr. Dlomo, Ms. Gela, Mr. Sokacha, Ms. Wilson, and Ms. Mamhlengwa, and Mr. Van Staden. I have received two apologies. One is from the minister. He will not be able to join the meeting due to other commitments, and Ms. Chirwa is not well.
Chair, Honorable Munya is here. It is this technical error or by mistake from the secretary of the Portfolio Committee. Honorable Munya reported very early this evening.
And Honorable
Munya
is in here.
Good morning.
Good morning, members. Can we have confirmation of attendance by the Department of Health, please?
Thank you very much, Honorable Joint Chairperson. Good morning to all the colleagues, honorable members. It's Deputy Minister Prasa here. I'm expecting the DG, our new DG, Dr. Sandile Buthelezi, to be on the line. I know that the CFO, Mr. Ian van der Merwe, is there. But can I just ask, I'm not able to access the participants list. I'm not too sure whether, but I'm expecting the DG to be part of the departmental delegation, leading the delegation. Can I just request if the DG is there, can the DG please confirm that he is here and the other members of the leadership of the Department of Health? Announce themselves.
Thank you very much, Honorable Deputy Minister, Honorable Chairperson of the two committees, and Honorable Members. Yes, I am here. My name is Sandile Buthelezi. And with me is our CFO, Mr. Ian van der Merwe, and we are also joined by the NFC President, Professor Professor. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I'm going to ask for the secretaries to just give us any apologies that is there, and after that I will hand over to Dr. Glomo to chair the next session.
Thank you, Chair. The apology that I've received is from the Minister, the Minister's office. The Minister will not be able to join the meeting due to prior engagement. And Ms. Chirwa will not join the meeting because she's not well. Thank you.
Thank you. Over to you, Dr. Glomo.
Thank you very much, Honorable Gillian, for handling the first part of the meeting that well. Just to update the honorable members, we agreed that we will have the entities that work and report to the department joining us in this presentation. We may not find time to get them to make a presentation to us on adjustments prior to the engagement that must take place within this short space of 2 weeks. So they are here, and the presentation that will be made by the department will be inclusive of what the department is allocating to those entities, and we will then be able to ask. I see Professor Glenda already here. I would probably expect all other entities, as I would imagine, that work and report to the department to be here logged in the event, and we also want to get clarity from them directly. Let me therefore, before I allow the department to present, to on behalf of ourselves as members, to offer our condolence to my chairperson has already done it about the MEC Northwest. We also had a bereavement of the DG's family. Dr. Buthelezi lost their father, and he was having laid him to rest over the weekend. Our condolence to you, Dr. Buthelezi, and the family. We also received some of the good news regarding Professor Makoba, who is also one of the entities, ombudsman, reporting to us, that he has been given a responsibility to support the COVID programs of another country. I think the Deputy Minister or Professor Glenda will know that better, but we also, on behalf of the committee members, send our appreciation to his appointment in that responsibility. We are now having 52 members who have logged in here, and I was now going to give this opportunity to the department then to lead us in their presentation. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, and all other participants from the leadership of the department and also from entities, as you mentioned.
Let me join the joint chairpersons also in passing our condolences, firstly to our DG, as Chair has mentioned, who lost his father late last week and laid him to rest on the weekend. We also join in passing our condolences to our colleagues in the Northwest Executive Council, led by Premier Mokgoro, on the passing of Honorable Gordon Kihakilwe, the MEC for Cooperative Governance, Traditional Affairs, and Human Settlements. We were indeed very much shocked to learn of his passing. The Honorable Member tested positive late last week, went into self-isolation in the back, and then while at home on the weekend on Sunday, he became quite ill on Sunday and was admitted to the hospital in Frederick and stayed over the night on Sunday. And then on Monday morning, the hospital, the doctors at Freiburg decided that they felt that they needed to transfer him to Klerksdorp Hospital. And unfortunately, on arrival at Klerksdorp, he suffered a cardiac arrest and passed away. So his soul rest in peace. This is indeed a reminder of the fact that this pandemic which we're dealing with here, attacks anybody. It doesn't differentiate whether in terms of position, class. It's a pandemic which is really a threat to all of us. Honorable members, we did appreciate this opportunity on behalf of the minister and myself and the department to come and present the adjusted budget. As honorable members appreciate the fact that the president did announce on the 21st of April a relief fund which covered social relief, relief in the economy, and in that respect, that also affected our department as a frontline department in terms of dealing with this pandemic. And the president announced an amount of 20 billion rand as an injection into the health fight against the COVID-19. And this, obviously, as members would remember, then led to the Minister of Finance presenting an adjustment budget. It is in this regard that we are here with our senior management to come and make a presentation in terms of how this budget will assist us in dealing with the various challenges which lie ahead of us, which we are dealing with on a day-to-day basis, which will cover areas of infrastructure. As you know, honorable members, that the COVID-19 has led to a demand for more hospital beds, a demand for intensive care units, high care, demand for more laboratory testing, demand for personal protective equipment, a demand for more human resources. So these are the aspects which this 20 billion rand injection into our fight against COVID-19 is assisting us to deal with that. So without any further ado, I will request our DG, Dr. Mtelezi, to lead us in the presentation to the joint committees on this special adjustment budget. Over to you, DG.
Thank you very much, Honorable Deputy Minister, Honorable Chairperson, and Honorable Members. We'd like to request that the Honorable Members can allow us to get our CFO to lead us in the presentation, which is going to share with you. Over to you, Ian.
All right, thank you, Chairs and members. I hope I'm audible. I will share the screen and I will deal with the matter of the but can be seen. Is it seen? Jake, is the presentation visible?
No, it's not visible here.
Not yet.
Let me see if I can. Is it there now, Jake?
Yeah.
Go uphill.
All right, so it's visible, thank you. Let me just put it onto a slideshow. All right, is that fine?
Try once more slideshow. Yes.
Thank you, then I'm happy there. All right, yeah, I'll discuss the NDOH, in particular, adjustment budget. And just to give you some background is that initially our planning started in April. We had submissions to the National Treasury at the time. We also had a special forum of CFOs. And we basically presented initially two scenarios, which was an optimistic scenario and a pessimistic scenario. And at the time, the budgets came about to about 14 billion and 26 billion respectively. But just to keep in mind that this was, you know, an initial stage, and there were some aspects that were not totally costed properly at the time. Some of the HRH wasn't clear yet, and there were some other matters on infrastructure also that we did not have information on. As the DM said, the relief fund was announced on the 21st of April for healthcare over 20 billion. I think the Minister of Finance eventually allocated 21.5 billion. I think most of it is linked to the provincial departments of health. We also calibrated the model again in May to be in time for the special adjustment budget submission, which was done on the 27th of May. And that envisions a peak in July, August, and September period. So, Chair, you would agree that this is a moving target to some extent, and the budget is as in at and when at a specific moment in time. Just to give you some further feedback, we presented to the National Treasury a total summary budget of about 37 billion, and you will see on the left-hand side. These are the elements that we included in the budget at the time, which was the PPEs on port health, the ICU beds, surveillance of NICD, thermometers, isolation, oxygen beds, pharmaceutical, some surge capacity, the issue of the Cuban brigades, the PAC staff, communication, cover technology, some on MBOD, on the testing part, construction and infrastructure, as well as some mortuary. So that essentially came to about 37 billion that we requested at the time to the National Treasury, or that we put forward, and that was a sector request to the Provincial Treasury. The funding that came through amounted, and with our reprioritization of our total budget to about 3.4 billion, if you look at the funding that was preliminary allocated by National Treasury, you will see that there was PPEs allocated as a buffer stock to the National Department of Health, some funds on the port health, surveillance on NICD of 96 million, which is going to be part of the transfer payment at National. For the Cuban Brigade, 41, almost 42 billion allocated. For communication, 50 billion. And for our COVID technology, which includes track and trace solutions and other solutions, we've allocated 38 billion, and then a field hospital of 200 million. The National Treasury funds through reprioritization to the provincial departments of health, included PPEs of 63 million. But I have to say that this is not necessarily a new fund, as there was some reprioritization within the HIV/AIDS and other programs of conditional grants that affected this. The allocation of the 3.4 billion would go to conditional grant funds, and provinces would have the option until the end of, I think, July, to submit business plans for this conditional grant, which we would then consider. And having said all of this, the allocations that provinces would probably allocate might differ from what is here. This was the initial proposal by the National Treasury. So to your right-hand side, you will see that we did the reprioritization of in the HIV budget, for instance, of 604 million. The Cuban Brigade was an earmarked fund by the National Treasury for this program of 283 million. And then the additional allocation to provinces was about 2.5 billion. And about 2.5 plus the 23. That was the additional allocation by the National Treasury. And this additional allocation would form part of a COVID component within the HIV grant budget. This would then be subjected to a business plan. And we would expect provinces to submit business plans by the end of at least July, after they've also got their own allocations back from the provincial treasuries. So, Chair, just to say that the need is much bigger than what the allocations are, and provinces obviously would have to further reprioritize within these existing budgets as the pandemic unfolds. Just to go through it, that we have the NDOH adjusted budget, the reprioritization, the earmarked funds priorities for COVID-19, and then the additional component to the HIV allocation.
Chairperson, sorry, Ian, I'm not sure why it's only my screen which is not moving. If other honorable members slides are moving, it's fine. I don't know what, I'll have to check what's the problem with mine. I'm just checking whether other members are not disadvantaged as well.
We are moving.
We are moving, okay. Minister.
Okay, it means there's a problem with my gadget. Okay.
All right, Chair. Let me continue then. So the baseline budget, as was published initially at the start of the financial year on the 23rd of June, was 55.5 billion. The allocation earmarked for COVID amounted to 5.5 billion at national department, of which 2.6 was reprioritization within existing grants and within the existing voted funds of the National Treasury, and then the once-off allocation for COVID-19 to the National Department, which would mostly be under conditional grants, amounted to 2.9 billion. And the new baseline that will be published for the special adjustments would be then amount to 58.4 billion for the financial year. We understand that there would be the normal adjustment still during the period of September and October, and that would give us further opportunity to reprioritize further if the need does arise at the time. As we said, that the reprioritized towards COVID-19 was 2.6, and the additional once-off allocation was 2.8 billion or 2.9 billion, but 96 million of that was earmarked for the NICD, would then form part of the transfer payments to the NHLS. Just to show that the focal areas that will be funded or partially funded through the new COVID-19 component under the HIV grant, there would be a component for the PPEs, the personal protective equipment, the contracting of private critical care beds where needed, And I know that there's been some discussions already with the private sector in terms of the needs and the allocation and some negotiations in terms of prices. The laboratory tests performed by the NHLS is also part of the funding, and provinces would have to allocate a number, you know, a budget towards the NHLS and the testing. Although the NHLS has not yet started charging any funds, any expenditure to the provincial departments of health. There's also the issue of procurement of thermometers for the community health workers, the assisted with screening, and then the Cuba Medical Brigade. At least in this instance, we feel comfortable that the compensation component of the Cuban doctors have been covered, whilst provinces will take care of the accommodation and the ground transport. This is the funds earmarked at national level, which goes towards some communication. We've already had some expenditure on communication, so this would then have to take care of some of the existing communication needs and expenditures. As I say, the information community communication technology is quite a big aspect for the COVID-19, and we've invested in a number of solutions and applications, and we foresee that this, the money allocated, we'll probably not cover the entire solution, and as the solutions do develop, and we'll have to see in future budgets how to allocate some further funds to the IT component. We're looking at securing some buffer stock, and we have set out to secure a service provider for warehousing and clearance of stock, and that would be part of the national health budgets. Port health services, that's quite a big component in terms of the expenditure, and we're looking to strengthen that part, especially in terms of the human resources. And then, as I said, National Department of Health also has a component of the human budget that we will fund from this point. If we look at the next slide, Chair, the reprioritization of NDOH, there's reprioritization within the National Tertiary Services Grant, and mostly that would go towards the allocation of personal protective equipment as well as on ICU beds. Within the HIV/AIDS grant, $604 million was reprioritized towards COVID-19 activities. Within the health facility revitalization grant, about $1 billion was allocated, and the national health insurance grant, $22 million. Just to make the point, Chair, that provinces were requested to do these reprioritizations, so we have allowed provinces to indicate to us which funds of the direct grant they would like to allocate towards the COVID-19 component. On indirect conditional grants, about $538 million was reprioritized, and then from the allocated funds from NDOH, about $101 million was reprioritized towards these COVID activities. The additional once-off allocation, as I said, it was ring-fenced for the Cuban doctors, about $283 million, general funding of $2.555 billion, which would be subjected to the provincial departments and the ability to give us business plans on this, an NICD of 96 million, and that accounts for the total allocation of about 2.9 billion additional funds to NDOH. Just to give you a sense of the reprioritization of funds by the provincial departments of health on direct grants, you will see that essentially four grants that were affected. The first one is the National Tertiary Services Grant. And provinces have indicated these allocations towards COVID-19 in the Eastern Cape, $35 million. The biggest ones in Gauteng at $140 million. These are funds that they've reprioritized. In the HIV grant, the biggest reprioritizations lie in Gauteng and Limpopo province. On the health facility revitalization grant, which is obviously the infrastructure and which would take care of field hospitals and to a large extent also your health technology assessments. The biggest reprioritization amounts came from KZN, Limpopo and the Western Cape. And within the NHI grant, which was looking at the contracting of GPs and doctors, only Limpopo indicated that they would be able to reprioritize funds towards COVID-19. So these are essentially the reprioritized direct conditional grants by provincial departments of health. And we would also expect, Chair, that on each of these grants that there would be amended business plans submitted to be able to take care of the dollar requirements in this respect. On the NDOH, to give you a sense of how we reprioritize funds, on the health facility revive component, this is the indirect component, and remember the indirect component is what we do on behalf of provinces. Funds will be moved to voted funds of 191 million, to the COVID component of HIV and AIDS of 29 million, and then the field hospital of 200 million, which would then be the commitment by the National Department of Health. On the non-personal services component of the National Health Insurance Fund, 38 million, as I said, would be moved from the CCMDD allocation, from the ideal clinic component and from information systems. And that 38 million, Chair, as we said, would effectively take care of the ICT solutions, and we'll have to see how to augment that component going forward. On the GP contracting capitation, the total amount of 80 million will be moved towards voted funds to deal with the COVID matters. And then in the voted fund in itself, we've identified about 101 million from the core budget that could be moved towards voted funds and also to look at the COVID component. We have, in line with the Treasury regulations and instructions, created an additional component or a allocation within our standard chart of accounts for the COVID expenditure, and this is would be part of that component. So just to look at the priorities from the NDI point of view, we spoke about communication, we spoke about the ICT, the buffer stock of about 205 million. We would like to access funds and have buffer stock available in case of emergency by provinces. But this would mean quite a large communication with provinces to identify or to make sure that we, you know, look at their needs and not overstock on certain items and understock on certain other items. This would in the main go towards the PPE expenditure. And not necessarily take care of oxygen, which also seems to be becoming an issue at most departments of health. We spoke about the national, about the port health services, mostly on the HR component, on the HR of that, the Cuban brigade, the field hospital that has to be. That will be built through the infrastructure component, and then the shifting of 29 million under the HIV direct grant for other provincial priorities. Just to look at the HIV reprioritization, this was also done in conjunction with the provinces, 604 million. The funds reprioritized with 29 million, and then a new funding of 2.8 billion would then go towards the component in the HIV grant of about 3.4 billion. So this would be a separate component within our HIV grants. The provincial allocations on this grant, As it stands now, on the HIV component, again, Gauteng and Limpopo are the biggest contributors. The Cuban program, we have allocated, as I said, in this manner for the compensation part of 283 million, and this will be ring fenced. And having said that, Chair, there is also a possibility that as the pandemic moves, that the doctors would be reallocated, for instance, from Western Cape, you know, to Gauteng or to KZN, where the need arises. So this is not a static, and we'll have to, there should be a mechanism in place for us to reallocate funds within this program if need be, as the pandemic moves. And then the additional allocation, mostly to the Gauteng, KZN, Eastern Cape and Western Cape, which is the four provinces with the biggest surge at the moment, about 2.5 billion, and we will still need, as I said, business plans for these provinces. So just to recap, the reprioritized of 604 is allocated to the same province. So we haven't moved money in terms of the 604 million of reprioritized funds across provinces allocated within the same grant. The Cuban Brigade is based on the numbers allocated by province. The two variables that were used for the balance of the allocation of the 2.5 billion was mainly the uninsured population, and we took some national treasury advice on that, as well as the transmission rate. And these variables were weighted at 70-30, respectively, and that also accounted for the division by the by province. We are awaiting at National the final tabling of the special adjustments of provincial treasuries. As soon as we get that, we'll have a sense of how the additional funds were allocated by province, so we haven't got a total view on that at the moment. As soon as we've got that, then we're able to share and advise the committee on how that additional funds have been allocated. As I said, we're still waiting the revised business plans from provincial departments of health. So, Chair, in terms of the NDOH, so National Department of Health allocation, this is the allocations as we've got them. And we request you to note them and to support them, Chair. Thank you, Chair. This is the presentation on the National Department of Health allocation. Thanks.
Yes, here is the member asking us to do the special adjustment act and maybe support it. Now, I'm going to read the names of honorable members who have indicated their wish to ask questions. And then I'll hand over to Honorable Gillian so that she can also add the names and take over through the process of asking questions in this order that has come to my attention. Honorable Gela would be number one, followed by Honorable Wilson, number two. The third one is Honorable Sokacha. Fourth is Honorable Gwahube. Five, Honorable Janti. And then number six, Honorable Ismail. If you can take over from here, Honorable Gideon, and then add on other names that might not have come my way. Thank you very much.
I appreciate Shiriz Dumyai.
Chairperson, I've got Honorable Christian and Honorable Letuli and Honorable Baha. I will add if there's more names. Cool. Let me just start from the beginning. It's Christian, Letuli, Baha, and Maleka.
Continue with the meeting. Continue calling the members, starting from Anna Gela.
Thank you, Chair. Can I proceed?
Yes, you may, member.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me first welcome the presentation done by our CFO. As ANC, we move to support the budget as been tabled before us as members of the Portfolio Committee. We support the adjustment budget for our department, and we are looking forward that all the issues pertaining health hospitals will be addressed. We know that currently we had oversight to hospitals in some of the province. I managed to attend here in Gauteng because I'm residing here. There were issues that were raised during our oversight visit, which is the shortage of staff. As you know that some of the staff members were infected by COVID-19. Although we welcome the issue that also the department has employed temporarily COVID-19 staff so that they can back up or assist the situation faced by hospital due to COVID-19. The other issue is the issue of PPEs. I'm happy that is going to be addressed so that they can have enough PPEs in the hospital. The other one is the issue of ICU beds, which was a really serious concern because as we hear daily that COVID-19 is increasing in numbers and the hospital, they have a challenge of shortage of beds. I'm happy because the budget is going to address that. It's very clear that as a current government, we are looking forward to make sure that we assist and also we respond on this pandemic because it's a new illness, it's a new thing that we didn't know, but we are learning. But I'm happy because our government is responding positive. The other issue, Chen, is the issue of reprioritization for COVID-19. The issue of HIV, TB, malaria, the 604,711. If I can just get a clarity there whether that amount will be allocated to COVID-19. And then the other issue is the issue of emergency construction of 300 beds was at selected site in province, Department of Health. I just want to know which areas, which provinces, and how many allocations per province. But as the ANC, we are moving forward to be a support the budget adjustment as being tabled to us. Thank you very much, Chair.
Can I ask the next member?
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to everybody and to the team. Chair, you've stated that 21 billion will be transferred to provincial departments of health, and that for this they have to submit a budget or a business plan as to what they are going to do or what they require. And I think I have some concerns around this because we've obviously over the last 3 months seen some issues as far as the provinces are concerned. Certainly as far as mismanagement is concerned, poor planning is concerned. We had two incidences this week in Limpopo where ambulances refused to go out and pick up patients, both of whom subsequently died because they had no PPE. So that is an issue for me. 21 billion is a lot of money, and we're in a situation now where under no circumstances whatsoever can 1 cent of this go anywhere where it's not supposed to do. We are in the middle of a crisis. And you're saying that this will go in the terms of grants. Okay, now, are the provinces being given some idea or have they been given a set of protocols around which to work as far as they are concerned when they're doing the business plans for them? We always have a concern. We find that in some of the provinces, huge amounts of grants are going towards staffing components, that creates a concern. We've got severely short of emergency personnel. In the country as a rule, one ambulance at the moment is being required to cover 21,000 square kilometers. We are sitting in a crisis now where ambulance and emergency personnel are going to be a priority as this pandemic comes to the fore more and more. What are we going to do about that? I'm not advocating for central funds, but what I am advocating for, please, is can you give us the assurance that those provinces, when they submit their health plans, have been given a set of protocols or an idea of what it is they must include in this money? Because we cannot have money at this time misallocated to things that are not essential at this particular period in time. Thank you, Chair.
Members of Council.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Am I audible?
Yes.
Very much, Chair. Let me also thank the CFO for the good presentation that he has given us. And I think as the African National Congress, there's no way that we should not support this budget. This budget, I think, will make sure that the department carries on with the good work that they are doing in terms of making sure they are fighting this pandemic. My question, Chair, is around the infrastructure grant. Given the history of spending of provinces on this grant, either by their own or by the Department of Public Works as the implementing agent, I just want to check CFO. In his view, will provinces be able to spend these reprioritized funds? And if not, what is going to happen to these funds? Will they be surrendered to Treasury, or will they be readjusted in the department's budget? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Member Sokacha, Member Kwahubi.
Good morning, everybody. I apologize, I was on mute. There's actually just one concern, which is underpinned by a number of them, but just one particular concern that I have. The president announced that there would be a 20 billion or 21 billion rand allocation to provinces to fund their health responses. Now, Minister of Finance, 2 weeks ago, came to Parliament essentially to state that a large portion of that money is actually money that already exists and that it is not new money, and that provinces, in effect, would have to reprioritize existing budgets to fund their health responses. And Ian did allude to this in his presentation, that in fact this is almost the repurposing of conditional grants in the provinces. Now, the assumption from the provinces was that they would obviously be able to reprioritize whatever money they've got in their provincial budget, but they would also be allocated in an equitable share back money that would be coming to them as to augment their response. And provinces were obviously expecting that money. But now it seems as though they've been sent back to go and find the money to fund the response. So if Ian can provide clarity here, please, that, you know, how much money in rands and cents is being sent from Treasury and the National Department to the provinces themselves, and how much of that is actually purely for COVID response? Because from what we can see here, there's also a grouping of a package of services where there is almost a conditional grant for HIV, for malaria response. How much of that is actually purely a COVID response, because ultimately, if we are not funding the provinces equitably and properly, we're not going to be able to get the things that we need from them to be able to fund this health response. SOAs in have yet to be signed. What is the hold up with that? Why have we not signed SOAs when there are hospital beds that are now no longer available to certain people in certain parts of the country? This has been going on and has been coming for weeks, and it's not clear, even from your presentation, what the hold up has been. There are certain provinces that have not built field hospitals as yet. The Eastern Cape only has one, and they haven't actually rolled that out despite their numbers climbing. And in addition to provinces not being given the requisite funding, they're also expected to fund a part of the Cuban doctors program. Surely, this requires some kind of revision between yourselves and Treasury.
Thank you, Member. The next member is Member Ismail.
You forgot Honorable Janji, but she can come after Ismail.
Okay, thank you, Chair.
Can I come in, Chair? Chairperson, can I proceed?
You can proceed, Member.
Thank you very much. Chair, good morning to the members. And let me join too in appreciating the presentation. Chair, some of the questions that I would have asked have already been asked, but I've got this question that South Africa has a long-standing relationship with Cuba, which was pioneered by two presidents, Fidel Castro and Madiba. And we have been sending students to Cuba, and Cuban doctors have been coming to South Africa, which is something that we welcome. We note the budget allocation to that line item, but there's an expectation from South Africans that Cuban brigades should support us free of charge. Can you explain why there's that expectation, yet Cuban doctors have been coming to this country and have been working and have been remunerated? Why is it now that there's this brigade, there's another expectation? The second thing I want to ask from you, the CFO, we've just heard from WHO that there's a gross shortage of condoms. How is our country affected? How bad is the situation? Because as we deal with the COVID-19, we do not want to look into other ailments that are in the community. We want also that our communities should be taken care of. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Member Muniai.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. But before I make my point, I think it is very much important that let's not misrepresent the Honorable Minister, Dr. Zweli Mkhize. He is not the budget, he's not even here. So we have to deal with the budget presented by the CFO. This issue of trying to misrepresent him and play political dynamics here in the gallery will not work. But the second point that I want to deal with before I even make my point, this attitude, anti-Cuba sentiment, you know, for people that doesn't understand the benefit for Cuba has made to the liberation of our country, it's worrisome. In Cape Town, there's no way the budget will be the same. The province are not the same. The dynamics are not the same. This issue, I think Western Cape, what they must do, they must mobilize leadership to get the people quarantined, tested in quarantine. The gun just leave people moving up and down as if they can't provide. Then they argue for money. No, my point is, Chairperson, I think I will appeal that in the next budget adjustment, please consider raising the funds for NHI, because it's a game changer, it's the equalizer, it can resolve our current problems, rather than the current two-tier systems, the one for the rich and one for the poor, one for the public, one for the private. So, thank you very much. I support the budget 100%. Thank you.
Chairperson.
Thank you, member. Yes.
Ntabele here.
Yes, member Ntabele.
Can you put in Chaberlain last, because there's a list of members sent.
Okay.
I move now to member.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My concern is about the huge reductions in the building and infrastructure, which, if I understood correctly, is 220 million. Now, provinces have the discretion to spend their deprioritized allocations at their own discretion. Is there any concern that the expenditure will be done correctly and to the advantage of the people in the provinces and according to the specific needs, because each province's needs differ? Now, especially in the Northern Cape, hospitals are in utter disrepair. Recently, we did oversight at a quarantine site and a hospital site in the Makoland, and they only had 5 rooms, there were no beds, and there were no windows in the building. So what, how can we assure that provinces will see to issues like that? What oversight and accountability will they be held to account for, and how will national hold them responsible? And my second question is the reduced amount of 604 million for the HIV AIDS and TB component. Now, it was stated that this is due to the slower uptake in the antiretroviral treatment program. One of the members have already mentioned the shortage of condoms, etc. Now, how will this impact, or has the department modeled the potential impact on sexually transmitted diseases? And this includes HIV/AIDS, as well as unwanted pregnancies. Now, what will the long-term impact of this be in the future? Has the department done any feasibility studies on this, and how it will impact the country as a whole? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Member Latul, please.
Thank you, Chairperson, and greetings to everyone. As the presentation by the CFO on adjusted budget, one would have expected that the CFO would go into detail the adjusted budget. One member spoke of 21 billion, not trying to repeat what other members were saying, but 21 billion that is being allocated to provinces is not clear on what is going to happen. I come from KZN and I know a lot of hospitals that are short of PPEs. So it doesn't really say.
Member Latuli, switch off your video.
On how much in each province and what it is. Can you hear me?
Yeah, now it's better.
Okay. And also, I would have expected that the CFO tells us about the 2.9 billion that is additional. Whether is it going to be sufficient for the department's plans to deal with the COVID-19? And also, in KZN, Chairperson, we have learned that
a number of infected healthcare staff on COVID-19 has increased. So I wanted to know what support are they given in terms of mental health, stress and trauma. And lastly, I would also have expected on the presentation for the CFO to be clear on instance of corruption, whether have any corruption been uncovered and what is being done about it. So it is not clear on all these things that I'm asking. So the adjusted budget is in front of us, but there are a lot of questions that need to be answered that are not clear. Thank you.
Thank you, Member. Let's truly move to Member Baha.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me also welcome the presentation by the department. Firstly, Chairperson, I think I must just make a point that I think members are not misrepresenting the minister in this meeting. In fact, it's clarities that are sought in terms of the budget that is brought before us. And secondly, no one questions the presence of Cuban doctors in South Africa. In fact, the Western Cape did accept the allocation of doctors in the Western Cape and they are working there. So I'm saying at times when you try not to politicize something, that's when you get deeper into politicizing it. Getting to the actual presentation, Chairperson, I just have two issues that I want to raise. One, to what extent is the department playing its part in guiding provinces in terms of the prioritization? I'm asking this question in the line of looking at the shortage of staff, for instance, across provinces in dealing with COVID-19. How is the department providing guidance in addressing such area? But secondly, we've seen that money has not been going where it's supposed to. How is the department ensuring now that whatever allocation or adjustment is provided to provinces is mainly used for what it is meant for? The second and last one, Chairperson, is around the training of emergency personnel. I think that there's been an issue where even ambulance operators are not certain of whether to assist COVID-19 patients, etc. How is that addressed, or is that left upon provinces again to decide on how to deal with the allocation that is given to them? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Member Baha. We'll move to Member Mbeki.
Thank you, Chairperson. I appreciate the presentation by the department and support the budget. My issue, Chairperson, I want to check how will the programs for women, children and adolescents and health, WCAHB, impacted by this budget proposal? And the other issue has been about to check about the Cuban brigade, that how long are they contracted to be in the country? And my last question, Chairperson, we see that the NICT would be receiving an additional 96.7 million. How will this be spent? What does surveillance and control entail? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Member Maleka. Is Member Ismail back?
Yeah.
Member Ismail?
She called and said that she is covered and she's a...
And we move to Member Chabali.
Thanks a lot, Chairperson. Most of the questions, issues I wanted to address are already addressed by other members. I just want to provide, because I'm actually worried about the contribution that is done by Cuba in the fight against the pandemics all over the world. Of course, Honorable Baja explained it, that you know, they accepted Cuban doctors. But it's like, you know, you're doing people a favor, we accepted them. What I want to check is how many students are taken by the Western Cape government to do medicine in Cuba. I understand there was a young person who was... I'm asking this question because there's life after COVID, that we need more doctors after this. So I want to check how many students are trained in Cuba from the Western Cape. And if there is information about the students who was encouraged to leave Cuba because of some ideological something, I'm not even sure. What is the progress with that? Otherwise, I don't want to repeat what other members have said. Thanks, Chairperson. The budget is supported. We need this budget to have a movement forward. Thanks.
Thank you, Member Chabaling.
May I ask one question, Honorable Chair?
Yes,
continue,
Dr.
Blomo. Yeah, thank you very much. And it's probably directed to Professor Glenn Dagley. We need to give him some comfort that we are going to, at the end of this month, getting out of our winter season. And we know that this virus is almost a flu-like, and therefore in August we should be having less and less flu. Should we be expecting less and less COVID from the scientists? What should be the hope that we can give to some of us if we continue in this trajectory of really doing the best in terms of the protocol? Because there are various information coming in as to when are we going to be really over this peak. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is very quick, Chair, if you will allow me. I just need to know from the department regarding the issue of the transportation of the patient, I think our EMS system is not adequate, and how it is being addressed within this adjustment budget. Then Minister, Deputy Minister, the issue of tracing of positive cases is still a challenge throughout the country. And the issue of the isolation areas is a problem, because there is some families that can't go into isolation because of there's not enough space. Or the other issue is the issue when we need to assist the community to go into the site. I think there is still a stigma on when positive patients also had to go to the quarantine site. I see in the adjustment budget there is money being allocated to the advocacy process, and how far is the department in really rolling out the process of advising people to go into this site when they are tested positive? But from my side, Chair, I think let's agree on this adjustment budget. NCLP, ANC members is in support of this special adjustment budget. I will hand over to you now, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Let's send it back to the Deputy Minister and his team to lead us on the clarity and the questions that have been asked. Thank you, Deputy Minister.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm going to keep the video off just to hopefully improve the audio because the network does become a challenge. Thank you very much to the honourable members for the questions and comments. I'll just respond to one or two issues, and then I'll ask the DG and the team just to decide who's going to deal with what aspect. Firstly, let me deal with just the last matter raised by Honorable Gillian, to say that indeed part of the major challenge in terms of where we are as the pandemic is surging. We've already have, you know, our quite high peak in the Western Cape. We don't think we're out of the woods. The numbers seem to be coming down, stabilizing, but it's still very high. And we, at this stage, we have no reason to believe that the Western Cape is already at the level of tapering down. It's encouraging, but the challenge still remains, as you can see. Counting really at a very high, what Prof. Karim called the flames and the third fire, almost getting into the third fire like where Western Cape has been. Now, we are quite conscious of the fact that the matters which Honourable Gideon has raised are quite fundamental. You know, firstly, as we know, the key, our key mitigation is in terms of prevention. The basics in terms of hand washing, social distancing, wearing of masks, avoiding crowds, cleaning surfaces, and all those. But the next line of defense is that once some individuals get infected, we have to make sure that they are diagnosed, they are tested, and the contacts of those individuals are traced, and those who are tested positive, either if they are not very sick, can also self-isolate in their homes, or else if they don't have facilities, must go into state-provided facilities, and the contacts must be quarantined. Now, that's really the key in terms of, you know, managing the pandemic and making sure that we don't really get our health needs are not overwhelmed, and also that we don't get into a situation where it's a runaway fire. Now, it is clearly a challenge, as we have witnessed in the Western Cape, and now we are working with Gauteng to try and see how this can be avoided. The moment at one of those, once you reach a stage where either because of stigma or because of various reasons of reluctance of people, once you get a low uptake of people who don't have facilities to can self-isolate, not taking up opportunity to be isolated in facilities paid for by the state, then we have a problem. Because then it means even though you test and the results come and there are about 2,000 people who tested positive over the last 24 hours, 1,000 of whom can't actually self-isolate, if only out of that 1,000, only 100 are willing to go into facilities, then it means 900 are actually going to be roaming, you know, the streets and infecting families and so on. So that's really a very key issue in terms of, that's why in the budget, I think the CFO indicated that there's a fund allocated for communication, because we are convinced that good communication, mobilization, you know, of leadership at the local level is going to be very key for us to manage this pandemic. So the health department and the healthcare officials and the healthcare workers can only do up to a certain stage, especially in terms of, you know, your hospitalization of people who are already sick. But in terms of reducing the spread of the pandemic, it's really communication, you know, and also mobilization of leadership at the local level, so that communities can actually look after themselves. So that's really a matter which the Department of Health across national and provincial can only do, as much as providing the leadership and information and mobilizing. But at the end, we're going to depend on the community leadership. The next issue which I want to just say a few words on is what Honorable Dr. Janji raised about the expectation in some quarters in the country, where people seem to think that the support which the Cuban people and the Cuban professionals are giving to us should be provided free. Now, I can assure members that, in fact, the compensation which the CFO has mentioned, about 283 million, it's really, if you look at the level of skill, experience, the impact which this Cuban brigade are bringing into our fight, if we're to compensate them at the South African scale in terms of grading of health professionals, because many of them, you know, have tons and tons of years of experience, high qualifications, they've been all over the world, and, you know, over and above their qualification, a lot of experience, they would be at, you know, super specialist level. But the compensation is really at the very basic medical officer level, which is where we're indeed very grateful. But, you know, we must also appreciate the fact that they've got families, you know, and as they do this patriotic work, you know, internationalist patriotic work for us, it's only correct, as we have done over the years, that we also recognize that and compensate that, because at the end, you know, we would not want to be almost like wanting them to practice slave labor, to say, you know, a poor country which is under blockade, America is blockading, trying to collapse their economy, but they are still ready to go out and help. And if we then expect that when they do come to help, while they still have their families, they must look after themselves as well, that this must be free of charge, it's really, I don't think it's very reasonable. So we're very clear from the health ministry side that what we are providing as compensation is really very basic, and we want to ask South Africans to accept that this is what this is just the correct thing to do. Can I then hand over to DG just to see the allocation from the executive members of the department to see who's going to take which question? Thank you very much, Joint Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Deputy Minister and Honorable Chairs of the two committees. The CFO will deal with the budget specific questions. There are a few questions that I'm going to address. And thank you to the Deputy Minister for dealing with some other questions. I think the first one that we really want to talk about is the issue of contracting of the private sector and the signing of SLAs. I must just give a brief background that we met with all the CEOs of the private hospital groups and the private led, and we actually finalized the tariff, which will be the countrywide tariff, and the provinces are at different levels. The Western Cape is far ahead. We started there because there was a lot of pressure there. And we actually even last week, we workshopped all the heads of departments on the master SLA that we will be using. So it's up to the provinces now to move ahead in terms of analyzing the contract, the SLA with the private hospitals. Most of the provinces are still not having a lot of pressure. But we know that the Western Cape, Gauteng, and Eastern Cape are working on that. So what the minister has done is actually, in terms of ensuring that there is more capacity in the North African provinces, especially the Western Cape. We deployed a very senior former head of department to go and work with the Western Cape, and things are moving well. Same has been done also for the Eastern Cape, and one of the priorities for them is to ensure that no patient does not have a bed, whether it's in public or private. So that is the reason. So we're working on Gauteng, as the Deputy Minister has mentioned. We had a meeting with Gauteng MEC and his senior team until midnight last night, just to also try and at least we have some lessons from the Western Cape, so we don't want to get in. But the private sector has been very receptive and have agreed on the per diem tariff that we've agreed that we will pay and we'll review as we move forward. On the issue of the HIV budget cap, I think we must just allay the fears of the honorable members that this has been done quite legitimately, but also globally, because they knew that some of the budgets from the domestic fiscal will need to be reprioritized to address the emergency. They've made money available from the multilateral funds, specifically the global fund. We've just been awarded an extra 66 million, and we're expecting an extra 200 million in the next in the next 2 to 3 weeks, which will actually reduce pressure to ensure that we sustain the services in terms of HIV, TB, maternal child and women's health programs, as we move some funds to address those. So those are able to fill in the gaps. But maybe in another meeting, we can come and present that fully, how the multilateral fund has come in to actually pushing us as a country as we move forward. Of course, yes, we agree on the issue of psychosocial support services for the workers. There are a number of programs that through our occupational health and employee wellness programs that we have put in place. And we've also worked with the other institutions where we've put together counseling services for our healthcare workers. The good program that has been put together by the University of KwaZulu-Natal, which yesterday I was meeting them up with the Health Department of Health in KZN, but we're doing the same in other provinces where they've developed these services. Same thing has been done by a group of psychiatrists and psychologists and social workers led by Dr. Zinela in the Eastern Cape, just to ensure that we do care for the carers in terms of their mental health and psychosocially as well. In terms of guiding the progress within privatization, the CFO will touch on this one, but we work very closely with the heads of departments. But also what is important is that for them to get some of the funds in the form of the conditional grant, they need to submit a business plan. And our responsibility before approving those business plans is to ensure that it is actually in line with what the priorities are, and we have a very symbiotic relationship with them. I mean, as much as yesterday, we had a call with them again just to go through some of the issues, and we are fully supporting all the provinces through the National Health Council and the NHC Tech, where I actually meet with the HODs. In terms of the isolation facilities and the quarantine sites, yes, there is a big program that has been put in place, critically working with the Department of Public Works, and also ensuring that those beds are being utilized. But I must mention that we've picked up a snack, for example, in the Western Cape, where we had a lot of beds, but there was no appetite for from the people to use those beds. So we're trying all the other means to ensure that people do actually take up those beds as they are available for use, especially for those who cannot self-quarantine in their particular areas. But we also would like to request honorary members through their constituency work as well to ensure that we are able to actually speak to the communities that it is to the best interest of the country for them to go to this area to care so that they don't spread the infection. Because infection is not going to be defeated in hospitals, but outside in the communities. Then the issue on emergency personnel has been noted. the CFO will comment on that one. And I must say that yes, for NICD, I don't think I got the question very well, but I wanted to say that we have a very good relationship with NICD, and that externally worked very hard to build up the capacity and be able to try meet the demand. Actually, when we started, close to 80% of the tests were done in the in the private sector. But now we're sitting at a place where between 55% and 60% is now done in the public sector, and the rest in the private sector. That's how NICD has actually worked hard to catch up, even though we still had issues, of course, in terms of the testing equipment and reagents, because of the issue of global demand and disruption of some supply chains and logistics. But we've been able to address those through a number of initiatives, including the AU procurement platform, which was launched by our honorable president as the chair of the AU, and we've been able to tap into that, where there are actually ring-fenced stocks for the African countries, so that we are not disadvantaged when competing with bigger countries. For now, I think I can stop there, honorable members, and request our CFO to take the specific financial question. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I'll touch on some of the questions that were asked, and also some of them do overlap. And if I miss any, please remind me. I'm happy to look at those. I think the DG has spoken quite a bit about the HIV. Just to reiterate that the HIV reprioritization would not move out of the HIV grant, but still remains within that same grant. Provinces have just moved it towards COVID-19 activities, but they still have some flexibility in terms of application of the funds within the total grant. We've taken note of the comments on the staff and the PPEs as well as ICU beds. And just to state here that obviously our request was much more than what was received by the National Department of Health, and we expected that. But we had to make the case to our National Treasury in terms of our total allocation and needs. And just to say that, again, I want to reiterate that this was the allocation of the need at a certain time. And obviously it's a moving target, and the needs might get more as it goes along. The 21 billion to provinces, we have to essentially get it back from provinces to see what the provincial equitable share allocations were. We provide, from national point of view, we provide grants to provinces, which, as the DG explained, has to come against a business plan. So the issue is not necessarily that SLAs were not signed, it's just a question of business plans that have to be submitted to Treasury after the allocation or the gazetting of the allocations by the National Treasury. Honourable Wilson, the grants are from the National Department of Health. The protocols that were designed go to provinces in the form of guidelines on how to address aspects of the COVID-19. But we have had some discussions in terms of with provincial departments of what their needs should be. So the provincial equitable share expectation is that about 15 billion would then go to to all the provinces combined. The allocation of that, as I said, we will have to wait for the final allocations by the provincial treasuries to the departments of health. We do know that National Treasury has embarked on a total reprioritization of provincial budgets in a whole, to find about 130 billion rand within the total allocations of provinces. We also know that provincial departments of health had to contribute to that reprioritization, but the expectation is that they would receive funds on top of what they reprioritized. So in the case of, I think, Eastern Cape, they reprioritized about 700 million, but they do expect allocation of about 1.2 or 1.4 billion necessarily. So until we get that final picture, we would be able to see what the impact is on the provinces and how the 15 billion has further been allocated. On the issue of the infrastructure grant, we don't foresee any under expenditure on this infrastructure grant at all, actually, purely because the needs on infrastructure is so huge for the COVID-19. That's number one, and number two is that there has been some considerable commitment as well on the infrastructure grant prior to the COVID-19 pandemic. So provinces would have had commitments, quite a number of them, for existing projects. Obviously, these projects, some of them would need to be redirected or delayed if need be, to look at the infrastructure needed for the COVID. And as I explained, to that extent, any provinces have actually reprioritized funds within the direct grant for the COVID-19 activities of about 1 billion rand. And the expectation is that would probably go mostly to the issue of field hospitals, as well as some quarantine facilities and to health technology assessments. I think I've spoken about the reprioritization of the 150 billion and the expectation that business plans have to be submitted to ourselves to take care of that. So SLAs was not the issue. I'm not going to touch on the Cuba method. I think the DMS has spoken about the issue of the Cuban brigade. Again, the issue of shortage of funding, I think Lydia has addressed that to some extent, but just to say that the HIV grant has still got components for expenditure on the condoms, and the issue might just be the supplies worldwide on the supply of the condoms. On the NHI fund, although we prioritized a number of funds within the current financial year, we have protected the NHI budgets over the NTF going forward. So there's no movement on the funds going forward. We have also, if you look at it, tried to protect the current financial year's allocations as well. And for the most part, the biggest impact would be on the indirect grant for infrastructure that would shed funds for the buffer stock, as well as for the building of a field hospital. So that would be the biggest move in terms of the infrastructure grant on the NHI component. Just to address the issue on at the Northern Cape in terms of the health facility revitalization grant, we have seen that the province has allocated or reprioritized, let's get a number, I think about 30 odd million rand towards the COVID-19, 30.7 million rand towards the COVID activities for the Northern Cape. So there has been some movement. If it's enough, that's another question, but it will still be within the province. And the same with the 604 million. As I said, it still remains within the conditional grant of the HIV AIDS, and provinces will have some flexibility in terms of the expenditure going forward. So, if I can say that if there's a need, if the second adjustment to relook the allocations or the reprioritization within the HIV grant, in provinces would obviously have that leeway and that flexibility within the grant. I think I spoke about the 21 billion. Definitely, we would also like to see what the allocation per province is going to be. The 2.9 billion allocated additional to the National Department of Health You know, obviously, it will assist a lot in terms of the grant. Would it be enough? Most likely, it won't be all sufficient for the needs. And as I said, we put forward a sector need at the time of about 37 billion rand. So together with the allocations to provinces, there would probably still be a need for further funding. And we'd have to engage as we go along, or look at our own efficiencies and reprioritizations continuously within the grant. I'm sure the DG has spoken about the issue of mental health matters. So just in terms of the spending by provinces and the issue of modeling, I think you would appreciate that there's been a certain number of models that have been done to assist with the expenditure and budgets. And in fact, our initial budget submission, and to a large extent our second submission, was based on modeling done with a consortium. And we also understand that many provinces do have their own modelings within. So the extent to which we assisted with the or guided provinces for reprioritization essentially went towards the modeling of the disease and the prevalence of the disease within provinces. In terms of funds not going where it's intended to, that's always a risk that is there. We have a strong presence of the AG at the moment within the health sector and also at provinces. We believe or we hope that with the conditional grant allocations and with the expectation that business plans would be submitted, we would be in a position to evaluate those business plans to make sure that the funds definitely move in terms of where it's intended, and secondly to monitor the expenditure as it materializes. The matter on the NICD allocation, 96 million, we in fact do have a breakdown of that budget, and I can run through it briefly. There's items for consumables, for contingency funds, for human resources, for laboratory equipment, for PPE, for IT, for communications, and then other operational expenditures, which comes to the 96 million. The biggest amount under the 96 million goes to consumables at NICD of about 30 million, contingency funding of 20 million, and human resources of 90 million, which would then be allocated back to the NHLS. As I said, Chair, that NHLS has not built provinces as yet. They've received some grant funding from Solidarity Fund, but indications are that the cost per test is around 400 rand. And although within the reprioritization or the funds allocated by National Treasury, we do make provision for expenditure on testing, provinces will have to do the breakdown in terms of their current volume and their current needs. In terms of how many students from the Western Cape, from Cuba, I'm not sure if the DMS has responded to that. Chair, and if I'm not mistaken, I think I've addressed most of the issues, unless I've missed some of the salient points on the questions. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, when you want me to respond to Dr. Blomer's, Chair Dr. Blomer's questions, just let me know.
Go ahead, can you and respond, yes.
Sure, you ask a very, very hard question. So, the coronavirus usually circulates for two or three seasons, And so when a new coronavirus arrives, we can expect it to be in circulation for 2 or 3 seasons before it circulates out. This coronavirus is very, very contagious. And we, first of all, thought it only was spread by droplet spread. So when people cough and you've got lots of droplets, the virus is in the droplets, it falls on the ground. And so initially we thought that you could get it through droplet spread and through touching surfaces and rubbing your eyes and your nose. But just recently there's been reports of it also being airborne. So the issue of ventilation becomes very important, particularly in congested areas and in areas where you're reconditioning air. And there has been evidence of the virus being spread through ventilation. We heard in China where in a restaurant people sat lower down for air conditioning and were infected, and in some areas, some close areas like churches where singing has propagated transmission. So that's why the issue of masks is very important, and that masks should be used as much as possible. And the importance of non-pharmaceutical interventions like distance, physical distance is very important, as well as washing your hands. So those are the reasons why we need to implement the non-pharmaceutical interventions. So you asked how long will this last for? So we've seen in Northern Hemisphere countries that have gone through winter and are now going through summer, like the US, they continue to peak. And so when we thought the US had peaked and it couldn't get worse, in fact it's getting worse, and now they're having, you see every day, you know, more and more infections from 20,000 to 50,000 just recently. And that's because there's non-compliance with masks. We see in Texas people not wanting to use masks, and you also see when people congregate together, you get more evidence of spread. And so that reinforces the need for the non-pharmaceutical interventions, that people don't congregate in closed areas and maybe start to congregate in open areas, and to avoid crowds and to make sure that we keep our places open, and maybe even churches should be in outside areas or in very well ventilated areas. And it's very hard because obviously it's winter now and taxis have their windows closed, and so it makes people in congested areas even harder to protect people. And so it is possible that if we could get taxis to keep their windows open when they are driving, and maybe even some people have suggested face shields in taxis, because if there's a spray onto your face, the face shield will be better. Face shields are around 20 rand at some of the chemists, so it may be an affordable intervention for people who can't afford to avoid crowds, may be important. And so I think in terms of the, you know, when's it going to last for, you know, it's going to be with us for a long time unless we have a vaccine. And so what we have to do is look at ways of trying to keep our hospital beds open. And we've spoken about trying to limit our emergency rooms being full because of alcohol. So we do need alcohol control, and possibly the when we looked at when accidents happen, particularly alcohol-related accidents, we see they happen in the evenings. And so maybe a curfew may be important to try and keep our hospital beds open. I think it's important to know that South Africa, in terms of our case fatality rate, it's around 2%. In some provinces, a little bit more, obviously, as hospitals get congested. But at, so we have a lowish case fatality rate compared to the rest of the world. And maybe this is because we're learning, as we're learning about new interventions as things emerge in the developed world, we have seen a reduction in mortality in private sector by 25%. And that's an important thing. From the beginning of the epidemic until now, there's been a reduction in mortality by 25%. And that's because people are using half-low nasal oxygen, they're using anticoagulants, and they're using dexamethasone in the right way. What we have to make sure is with half-flow nasal oxygen, we need to make sure that it uses a lot of oxygen. So we need to make sure that our CFO is making sure that we're not going to be any interruption of our oxygen supply in the country. For people who have to stay at home, have to self-isolate at home, and people who are elderly and have comorbidities and who are isolating at home, you know, we have to make sure that we are watching their respiratory rate and their oxygen flow. And I think one of the first indicators that you need to go to hospital is when your oxygen, when you start to have problems breathing and your sats, your oxygen sats decrease, and maybe pulse oximeters are important as well for people who can afford them and who have to self-isolate at home, that having a pulse oximeter, you can buy them at chemists for between, depending on the variant, but around plus or minus around 500 rand in that region. I know it's expensive, but for people that are self-isolating and have got some money, having a pulse oximeter is an important thing to help you monitor at home. And so I think that as we learn, we're learning every day about this epidemic, and as we learn, we'll get better at managing the cases in the hospital, and we'll get better at managing people who are having to isolate either at home or in facilities. And so I think for us, Chair Dr. Glomer, Chair Dr. and Chair Dr. Glomer, we have to make sure that we implement NPI, and you know, that's why the communication is so important, is that people understand why we have to wear masks. We wear masks so if we do talk or if we do cough, it's covered by our mask. We have to also make sure that we ventilate places where there are crowds, and we also make sure that we try and avoid congestion where possible. And so, you know, so I wish that this coronavirus was circulating out by November, but if we look at even the US, I mean, they're now in summer, and they are actually having even a worse epidemic than ever before, and we've seen resurgences of this in other parts of the world. And so we're just going to have to try and implement the NPI until we get vaccines or other interventions that can manage the onward transmission or to treat the COVID infection that we have. So you know, so I think I think the adjusted budget's important. Because you know, we need to strengthen our health system. It's also important to note that every health system at a global level has been affected by COVID-19. It's not just South Africa. So it's important that we allocate resources to fight this epidemic. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. The question which Honorable Traveling has asked about whether there are any Western Cape sponsored medical students in Cuba, the answer is no. I'm hoping that now that the province will experience, you know, the benefit of working with a country like Cuba, going forward, they'll also see the need to fund poor students who are well-deserving, who can go and study medicine in Cuba. So one is hoping that going forward, the approach of the province is going to change, and they will also participate in the program so that the young people from disadvantaged backgrounds who are academically deserving, who cannot get admission into UCT, into Stellenbosch and other medical schools, can get the opportunity to go and study medicine and also learn more about primary healthcare-based medical training. So we're hoping that our colleagues in the Western Cape are going to have a different view, and going forward they will be prepared to sponsor our deserving young students from poor backgrounds who can go and study medicine in Cuba. I'll just check with the DG if there's anything left before we hand over back to the co-chair. DG, if you can indicate.
Thank you, Honorable DM. I think from my list, we have covered everything. I'm left with the members who that we need something. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Deputy Minister. You missed out on some things that you are not aware of. There are two members who logged in a bit late, challenges of logging in. This second round is only going to prioritize them and not take new questions from the members who have asked. It's going to be Honorable Imam Sheikh and Honorable Sukers, those two who will ask questions. Thank you very much. Gillian apparently is now locked off. I haven't seen her. And I know the members of the NCOP have got another plenary that they are rushing to. So maybe just keep it at that level, the two members only. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chair. And allow me to apologize for my late joining the meeting. I just heard emphasis on the issue of the virus being airborne. Now, I would like the department to tell me their view on this, because that is the argument that we have been having for a long time, particularly with ventilation problems. When the Department of Transport says that it's absolutely safe to travel by air for 2 hours and 3 hours at a time, and yet health experts, even the own national department, have gone on to say that traveling by air is a great risk. That's the first thing. Now, the second thing is that I would like to know, what is the department doing about moving to a preventative system? And we know that lifestyle diseases in South Africa is a major problem, diabetes and many others. What is the department doing? Are they going to prioritize the budget so that we could deal with the challenges we face in the health sector from a preventative point of view, rather than allowing our people to get sick and go to hospitals, put an impact on the entire department, on the labor force, on productivity and everything in the country? What is the department doing in terms of dealing with that? Because at the moment, Chair, I want to say, there's a threefold in South Africa, even in the manufacturing of goods. And I'll give you a good example. Diabetes is becoming the number one cause of death in the Western Cape. And yet there are products that are being manufactured, not monitored by the Department of Health, and it's having a massive impact on the health department and the lives of our people. So that's the second thing that I want to talk about. Now, the other thing is on the one hand, you talk about, and let me give you a good example, TB, and you talk about 2035 with what is NTB. What plan and program have you got with the other relevant departments? Because TB is linked to poor living conditions. So are you talking to human settlement? Are you talking to water and sanitation, the socio-economic conditions out there? I believe that there needs to be some joint effort between all the relevant departments for you as the Department of Health and us to be able to achieve what we really want to then of reducing fatality, but also creating a better quality of life for our people. Now, you talk about infrastructure. I know that there's now money that has been redirected from infrastructure, but yet we are going to need to spend more and more money in the coming years, particularly with infrastructure, given the fact that lots of our facilities need attention. Then, Chair, I don't know whether I can continue or whether I'm going to be impacting on the time, because I missed most of it, and I don't really know if I can just continue a little while longer or not.
Just give Honorable Sukers, you have had a bit of a good bite. Thanks.
Okay, Chair, I just wanted to give the last one and say, and that is, why is the department, knowing the challenges we face with alcohol, with tobacco, Minister has alluded to the dangers of it, why is the department not going on a communication drive to educate our people on the ground at all levels in the townships and everywhere on the dangers of all these things so that we can try and contain this virus? Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Sukers.
Thank you, Chair. Appreciate it. I just want to emphasize the, and I think it overlaps with what Shetty Mama said, the big concern is around community transmission. And I just want the department to please indicate how they will upscale community efforts, firstly to reach people who live with comorbidities in order for them to get their conditions under control, and secondly, how through messaging they will reach people at the community level. We have instances now where every sector is overlapping, health, education, social development, and there is a need for greater collaboration around these departments to reach communities with the right messages. Firstly, people that have contracted the disease in terms of what they need to do in order for them to manage themselves within the limitations, of course, of their socio-economic circumstances and where and what they can do, you know, like...
Honorable Sukers, we're still waiting for you. Okay. Okay, I'll ask Honorable Sukers to write down the remaining part of her question. If I could then take this back to the minister. Deputy Minister.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chair. I'll ask the DG, I'm sure he can deal with the questions from Honorable Sheikh Imam. I'll add if there's anything to add. Unfortunately, I think Honorable Sukers, the only thing we could pick up was on the concern about managing the comorbidities. I'll ask the DG to say something about that, and then if there's anything I can indicate. Over to you, DG.
Thank you very much, Honorable Deputy Minister, Honorable Chair and Minister. I'll take some questions, and then the other will be taken by Professor Kenda Gray, because he also sits in the Ministerial Advisory Committee. So some of the issues that Honorable Member Sheikh Kuman raised that he's going to deal with include community transmission, the National Joint Operations and Intelligence Center, where all departments need to drive a coordinated response from all the departments. That is set by the Secretary for Defense, and that is a technical committee that then reports to the National Coronavirus Command Council. So we actually work as a team that different work streams where we deal with issues of water availability, dealing with issues of transport, there is even a committee that deals with issues of repatriation of people, which includes international DECO, international cooperation, which also includes home affairs. So there is that work that is very standard. They are meeting every week, and then we report to the National Command Council to ensure that no department is left behind. So that one would rest at that level. On the issue of alcohol, tobacco, there is a special task that was put in to actually advise on the effects of alcohol, especially we have data from the MRC, and I will allow Glenda to also talk on this, that shows us that the problems that we are facing in terms of the closing of hospital beds after alcohol was reintroduced are becoming a problem. She did mention in her first response, but she can just touch on that. However, on our side, we are actually working on a very robust communication campaign to address all these issues at a community level. Now, on the issue of comorbidities, Yes, I agree. This is a problem that the country is facing, which was there pre-COVID, but now it exacerbates the mortality in people who actually contract COVID. So we are running campaigns that will also be strengthening. But more importantly, what the two ministers, the Minister of Health and the Minister of Social Development, have done, they formed a ministerial advisory committee on social and behavior change. Because most of these issues are behavior change issues. I mean, if you're looking at the issues of alcohol, it's a behavior issue. If you're looking at issues of diabetes, that's why they're called diseases of lifestyle. So we are ramping up our communication into that. But specifically through the MEC, the two ministers have brought in a number of individuals who are going to drive communication at a local level, at a world level, but also reaching specific constituencies, including the Churches, Health Committee, the Minister of the Church, which is Bishop Mpumlwana, for the South African Council of Churches, to lead the committee. But it's got all church leaders, it's got NGOs, it's got unions, because we're really trying to see that if these people are driving this on the ground, whilst we supplement, we actually complement this with the media campaigns that are ongoing, print, audio broadcast media, to try and reach to the ground. We hope we'll be able to reach that. I think what Professor mentioned is that with non-pharmaceutical intervention, that your best bet is just continuous communication. People must wear masks, people must social distance. We shouldn't give up on that constant communication. But also I'm throwing it back to our honorable members, because they have constituencies. We're also depending on them to ensure that this message is amplified as we move to those areas. I will stop there for now and allow Professor Ndakre to take in the other questions. Thank you.
Sure. In terms of air travel is very safe. The aircraft move air from outside every 3 minutes. So that's the first thing. So they replace the air in the aircraft every 3 minutes. Plus the filters that they use are HEPA filters. And these are the filters that we use in operating theatres, in hospitals. So in ICUs and in operating theatres where we have HEPA filters. So they use the same HEPA filters in the aeroplane as they use in operating theatres and ICUs. And additionally, the air continually, even though the air is being recirculated every 3 minutes, the air is blown from the ceiling to the floor all the time. And so, in fact, it's probably the safest place to be. What you should be worried about, rather, is at the airports to make sure that in the airports, in the queues, that you're maintaining physical distance, you're wearing your mask, and you're washing your hands. So I'd rather travel in an aeroplane than in a taxi. It's probably safer. What's very important, I'm more worried about taxis than aeroplanes, and I do want us to make sure that we try and get the taxis to keep their windows open, even though it's cold. People must just wear more jerseys and blankets in the taxis. It's very important. In terms of alcohol, you're correct. You know, so once we lifted the prohibition on alcohol, we saw two things happen. We saw our emergency rooms and hospital beds fill up, and we saw increase in gender-based violence. And so we've been following the data. We looked at the data during lockdown, and we saw huge reductions in hospital beds during the lockdown, which now have increased. And so our job is to keep the hospital beds open for COVID. And what we have to do is try and prevent alcohol-related injuries. We also see that a lot of the alcohol accidents happen at night. And so, so we have to try and control the accidents that happen at night. And we're going to try and control the alcohol-related incidents like gender-based violence and what alcohol does to our emergency rooms. And so it's quite clear there's a direct relationship between alcohol use and bed occupancy. We need to find a way of protecting the beds so that we can use them for COVID-19. So it's a waste of beds. any alcohol-related injury is a waste of a hospital bed. And we should be doing, as South Africans, we should be doing everything we can to protect the beds and minimize alcohol-related injuries.
Thank you very much. The last from me, Chair, is just to say to Honorable Sheikh Imam that indeed our approach is primarily a preventative approach. We're not yet there to the level of Cuba, for instance, in terms of the way we focus most of our resources. We are still very much spending most of our resources on the curative side, but we're making all efforts to make sure that our primary health and our health promotion and prevention of disease can actually be more and more strengthened. And the more we move into the implementation of the NHI, the stronger we will be in terms of a much more strong and focused approach on prevention and the promotion of health and prevention of disease, and a very primary health-centered approach. That's exactly where we're going. Thank you very much, Chair. From our side, and thank you.
Yeah. No, thank you very much. I'll read the question of Honorable Sukers, though it is not really a health-related matter. It is a workplace management that is fundamentally addressing the issues of a National Command Council. It's asking a question, why churches remain open with reported cases of infection with COVID. Now, that is beyond our focus as a health. But if there are members who would allow, who would actually answer that please. Let me then say before that, I remember between now and next week, you probably are aware we'll be calling you to then indicate your party interest and your party comments on this special adjusted budget, which will be a meeting next week. It may not be a very long meeting. I'm tempted to say in that meeting we invite Professor Glenda Gray and her team, because I have listened to them in another platform where they were talking about this impact of alcohol on health programs. Now, we can invite her here now if we agree that maybe the first hour we'll spend it on our budget adoption or comments next week, and the other hour we'll spend it on the presentation that will be made by Professor Glenda Gray. Please comment on that. After I've allowed Deputy Minister to comment on the question of the Honourable Sukers.
Can I ask DG, the issue of workplaces, the question is, from my understanding, that workplaces where people have, workers have tested positive remain open. I think there is some protocols from Labour, from the net joint. I'm sure DG can explain that. Over to you.
Thank you, Honourable Deputy Minister and Chair of the Committee. Yes, the issue is a very contentious issue, but the guidelines are very clear. You don't close the full factory, but you close the section, and then those people that have had contact will then need to go into quarantine. If you have a factory that is a big factory, like let me say the university. If it was a section of the university, you close that area, you do the disinfection, you quarantine the people, you test the contacts, and then they then come back to work after a particular period. But I know that some unions are not very happy with that. Even with us in health, so we have a meeting tomorrow to try and discuss that. But that's what the regulation is saying so far, that you put that section of the work. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Chair. We can hand over back to you. The DG has responded to Honorable Sukers.
question. Over back to you, Chair.
Yeah. No, thank you very much, members, and to all the presenters. Thanks to the team that came from the Deputy Minister's side. I therefore want to say to the members, we will be meeting again next week, obviously, to consider the adoption of this of the report that we are going to put together as a committee after listening to the Department of Health. I also intend to invite Professor Glenda on that day, on the second hour, to do just this. It's a very important program. If there are parliamentarians who must know better about the impact of alcohol on health, it is us. What we do with that is another story. But at least let us be armed with information and take it. So Professor Glenda, we will invite you next week. The time will be given to you by our secretary. Thank you very much, honorable members. Some of us will log in at 3 o'clock and listening to the minister giving us an update on the COVID-19. Thank you very much. Have a good day. Bye-bye.